The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Back in 2001, I did an interview with an author from Columbus. Phyllis Greene was 81 years old, and she had just published a memoir called It Must Have Been Moonglow. She had been widowed at the age of 79, and she kept thinking about her husband and how close they were and writing things down in a diary about him. And finally, it turned into a book, and it became a bestseller. She appeared on the Today Show with Katie Couric, who had also recently been widowed, and they talked about what that was like. And I talked to her on the phone in Columbus. She was coming through Dayton on book tour at the time. And we talked about her book and what an amazing journey it was for her at the age of 81 to have a bestseller. And she died at the age of 91 in 2014. And I loved talking to her. She was a very spunky guest. Let's listen now to Phyllis Greene reminiscing about her husband on It Must Have Been Moonglow, the memoir that she wrote, right here on the Best of the Book Nook. My guest is Phyllis Greene. Her book is It Must Have Been Moonglow, Reflections on the First Years of Widowhood. And you talk about the lifelong unit of Phyllis and Bob. And I'd like for you to tell our listeners a little bit about you and about your husband. Now, you came from families that were very close.
Well, yes. Bob actually grew up in Akron.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Columbus. And I knew him when I went away to college. And I would, when he was here, I would see him. And but we each had our own other personal life. We were just friends. And then he was drafted, and we wrote to each other just because it was the thing to write to our soldiers. And then he came home on leave, and we began to see more of each other. And then we knew that we really belonged together. And so in November of 42. He was in the first draft from Bexley, which is a small suburb we lived in then, and he had come here to work with the Bronze Shoe Company, and he was in the first draft out of Bexley in January of 41, and of course he thought he was going to get out in January of 42, and once Pearl Harbor happened on December 7th, there was no getting out. So he went to OCS, and after he graduated from OCS and went to Oregon with the 91st Division, eventually I could convince my parents that I should go out there, and we wanted to be married. They thought a second lieutenant's life was really very, well, it could have been very short,
mm-hmm.
Infantry lieutenant. But as it turned out, it was wonderfully long, and we were married for 56 years.
And he eventually served in Italy, didn't he?
He served in Africa and Italy. Mm-hmm. He was overseas for more than a year and a half.
You have a very funny story. I found a lot of humor in the book, but I love your story about the honeymoon and getting a plane to San Francisco and putting some liquor bottles in your luggage.
Right. It was hard to get from Columbus to Portland, Oregon, which is where we were married. So, and there were no planes available. So my mother and Bob's mother and I took the train to Oregon, and our good friends, Lois and Harry Hoffheimer is their name, he was stationed in Seattle with the FBI, which was wonderful because they could come down and be our brides or our matron of honor and best man. And so we had a small dinner after the wedding ceremony, which was in a hotel parlor. And my mother gave us what was left over from liquor, which I guess she had to buy. And maybe they didn't even have open bars then. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, we were in a DC-3, I guess it was, and the altitude had forced the corks or the tops off of the bottle. So by the time we got to the St. Francis to open our bags, it was like a brewery. There was just liquor all over everywhere. And my trousseau, which in those days brides seemed to have, was in navy blue underwear bags, and the dye had gone all over all the underwear. My wedding dress had big purple splotches on it. And it was funny, and fortunately we knew then it was funny, that it wasn't really a tragedy, and just instinctively we laughed. We threw up our hands and the windows and laughed, and we knew or hoped that we could live our life that way, having a decent perspective on things that happened.
Don't cry over spilt liquor. Huh?
Right.
Now, was this the lingerie that was made by nuns?
Yes, yes. It was, my mother thought that I needed to have handmade slips and gowns and things. And Mount Carmel, the Carmelite nuns, it's now a major hospital, Mount Carmel Medical Center and Mount Carmel East are big hospitals that grew out of that whole operation. And so my mother thought that was terribly important, and so she wouldn't let me go to Medford, Oregon, of all places, unless I had this handmade underwear, which never did make it to Medford, Oregon.
You described the young widow walking into the party.
Yeah. And somebody who read that said to me afterwards that when she was widowed, someone gave her the advice, don't even try to go to a party alone for 4 years.
Mm.
And it is hard to walk in alone or even with another couple. And not that Bob and I stuck by each other's side all evening at a party where people were mingling around. But it's a whole different feeling when you're alone. And you know that you're dependent on the people who brought you. You leave when they leave. They pick you up when they pick you up. You aren't really in control. And yet you don't like to drive at night if you can help it. And those are day-to-day things that you just have to figure out and do the best you can.
And your spouse can just make that subtle movement with the eyebrow.
Yeah. I mean, how many times did I look across the room and Bob just moved his head up a little bit, and I knew that meant up is out. Let's go.
Mm.
And so you do miss that.
You talk about the concept of paying forward. Now, I'm aware of what that means, but I'd never heard the actual term.
Well, you know, Woody Hayes actually did say it years ago. That's what you do. You pay forward. But this movement of paying forward, there was a book and then a movie, which I read last year. And really what it is you go ahead and do for people, and then if they each do for two more, it's just a whole kindness kind of thing that we all could use this all the time, and especially now.
Describe what you mean. Give us an example of paying forward. You give some in the book.
Well, the one that was just, I was in a TJ Maxx, actually, what I really like are linen handkerchiefs, and nobody makes linen handkerchiefs anymore. You're supposed to always use Kleenex. And I like to put a handkerchief in my purse. I know it's old-fashioned. And I mentioned it to one of the salespeople who said, oh, no, they didn't have them. And I said, I know you don't. I've been to every store there is. And she said, but somebody gave me a box of handkerchiefs that I just don't use, and I was going to put them in the thrift shop bag, and if you'd like them, I'll bring them in the store tomorrow. And I said, well, that would be so nice, and I'll be happy to buy them. And she said, oh, no, I'll give them to you. And here's this perfect stranger who bothered to bring them to work the next day. And I thought to myself, now I need to go out and do a special kindness for someone, because this is the way we can show our respect for our fellow humans and people we don't know. And if everybody did that, wouldn't it be a better place?
Hmm. You talk about the way things used to be, about not locking the doors. I grew up in the Midwest in Des Moines, and we didn't lock our doors at night, and we weren't afraid of people stealing from us. And
right.
You had that experience in the grocery store where ultimately your husband kind of looked out for you.
Well, he did. I'm not much of a cook, to tell you the truth, and I was looking for something called Weiler's Soup Starter, and it was on the top shelf, and this young woman reached it down for me, and then we talked about sodium content in soup, and she told me she couldn't read, and I was very sympathetic to that. And I was reading her sodium content off of different cans. And then a man reached in front of us and said, I'm looking for low sodium content soup. And I said to him, that's just what we're looking for. And I thought, isn't this a lovely human connection we're making here? And by the time I got to the checkout counter and opened my purse and the top two cards of my wallet, in my wallet, credit cards were gone, a Discover and a Visa both. Hmm. In that split second while she was talking to me, he had gotten those credit cards. My cash was still in there. And so I needed to call the credit card company to stop them. And the numbers, of course, are on the back of the credit cards.
Hmm.
And I did kind of panic. And I looked on the old bills, and I couldn't find them. And then I remembered Bob's wallet in his top drawer that I just hadn't given away or thrown out. And there were his credit cards, and so I could call the credit card companies. And they did stop payment, and those people did not go on a shopping spree on my credit cards. And so I didn't have all that aggravation of, you know, getting it taken off my bill. But I did have aggravation getting a replacement card from one of them. But nevertheless, the lady who helped me understand Pay It Forward was just exactly the opposite of the lady who saw to it that I was robbed of two credit cards.
Hmm. And you talk about her not being able to read. I know you and I have something in common. We love to read. We love to have a good book available, don't we?
Right, yes. And I don't believe for a minute that she couldn't read now, anyhow. She was, you know, she was youngish, and she did not look like a woman who was illiterate.
Uh-huh.
But that was just part of the scam. But I do love to read. And this group I belong to online, we are book lovers. It's called Books and Reviews in SeniorNet, and we post all the time, and we talk about books. And so I have lists of books that I want to get to if I could just get through the ones that I have here.
What are you reading right now?
Well, I'm reading right now Corrections by Jonathan Franzen, who made such a mistake because he said that Oprah chose him for her book club selection, and he made some comment about he didn't write that kind of literature.
He was insulted, supposedly.
Yeah, he was insulted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you think what Oprah has done for reading in this country, she has made turned people into readers that probably had never gone to a library or picked up a book. She just made everybody aware of how exciting it is to read.
Now, I hear it's an excellent book.
Well, I've just barely started it. I imagine it is. He's a good writer. But I'm also, I'm in a local book club, and I'm reading, I read a book called Rainy by Clyde Edgerton, who wrote Walking Across Egypt. It's an older book, but he's a wonderful writer, too.
What's it been like for you to be out at book signings?
Oh, it's so much fun. I was afraid I wouldn't know what topics to cover or what to do. Having a good interviewer like you makes it easy because all I have to do is answer your questions. But when I'm just at a book signing, I'm doing one tonight with my daughter, DG. We have a mother-daughter thing that we do, and I start out by saying we're Naomi and Winona. We're the the literary, you know. And I say they have the music, but we have the words, but we hope there's some music in our words. Hmm. And then we talk a little bit about each of us about our own books, and then we do some reading, and then we take some questions. And it makes for a very nice evening, and then we do the signing.
You have a very dry sense of humor. You're very clever. I had to stop laughing eventually at your quip, the angina monologue.
Yes.
That was very clever.
Well, yes, for a 81-year-old lady to even think of it.
Well, I enjoyed the book quite a lot, and I'm sure that many of our listeners would get quite a bit from it. Is there anything that you wished you'd put in now that it's been published that you feel like maybe you should have included but you didn't?
No, I think I pretty well covered my own experience, but I have gotten such lovely, lovely responses from people. In the back of the book, I have my email address plus a mailing address, which is a mailbox's address. And people have written such wonderful things that I wish I had thought of them. Mm-hmm. One woman told me that she had just gone to a new doctor, and she had to fill out the form that you do. And where it said married or single, she said she knew she wasn't really married, and she certainly wasn't single. So she marked in married, and then she put widow in parentheses. And she said, and then I realized that's how I feel I'm living my life, in parentheses.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, now, isn't that just beautiful? I wish I had thought of it myself. And, so, you know, just different aspects of it, explaining it in a different way. There are those kinds of things that, of course, I've had second thoughts. But as far as the experiences and the reflections, I think I covered those probably 12 to 18 months pretty thoroughly.
It's all about making connections with people, isn't it?
Oh, that part has been so rewarding. And what surprises me and interests me are the three reviews on Amazon. They're all younger men that have written the reviews.
Hmm.
And that certainly was never the audience that I was thinking would be interested. I thought my niche audience was widows, but a lot of children of widows. I had a young man say, if I had read your book first, I would have been more understanding of my mother when his mother had passed away. I would have been more understanding of her life as a widow. And so those are all things that make me feel comforted, too.
And we just never know who our audience might be. We have our perception of that, but it's always a surprise.
That is a great part of it. There are also younger couples, men especially, who have written and said, Now I realize how lucky I am to have my marriage. And one man said, I stopped on the way home today and took flowers to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of things are, they just make me feel great.
I'm a person who believes that there really aren't any accidents or coincidences. We have a perception that we're surrounded by them, but things just kind of happen, and they happen for a reason. And sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and you start reading, and you were reading that book about Vince Lombardi, and suddenly you come across the name Sid Gillman.
Right. When I was a teenager, and these scholar athletes came to Ohio State, and they were brought and sponsored by people who could help pay their tuition. And in those days, the scholar athletes came to get an education, to get a degree, and they were young men who needed some help. And one of those young men was Sid Gillman, and some people, family that I knew, was the sponsor of Sid, and so I had a few chances to be at a dinner table with him. And he was a co-captain, I think it was 1933, with Galus and Gillman were the captains. And I just thought he was, oh, just a knight in shining armor.
Mm.
And I knew he would not, he was older than, I'd barely gotten to high school, let alone college.
You had kind of a crush, didn't you?
I had a real crush. I had a real crush on Sid Gillman, and to read his name in the middle of the night, and then I thought, well, I know it's not going to be Sid Gillman, but somewhere out in this great world ahead of me, I'm going to have my own knight in shining armor. And I did say in the book, he rode into town in a heavily financed yellow convertible, which he referred to as the flying omelet.
Uh-huh.
And I had an excerpt, that chapter, in Modern Maturity, and there was this very cute illustration of a flying omelet with two people in it. I mean, it was a little Ford convertible, but it does look like an omelet. And I was able to be in touch with the artist who did it, and I called her, and she said if I would autograph a book for her, she would send me the original art.
Oh, my.
And I'm sitting here looking at it right now. It's in my blue room, which is what the room I made for myself and I talk about in the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And blue doesn't mean sad. It just means blue's my favorite color. And my computer desk is blue, and I have blue fabric on the chairs, and a lovely blue painting that had been my mother's of roses in a vase. So blue doesn't stand for sorrow. It just stands for upbeat for me.
Hmm. My guest is Phyllis Green. I'm not a big believer in astrology myself, but I think there's something to this Mercury in retrograde.
My daughter, DG, reads the horoscope things, and I'm not a great believer either. But when Mercury is in retrograde, things do seem to go amiss and get messed up. And I've lost checks, and I've lost my keys, and all of those things. And then I find out that Mercury is in retrograde.
Hmm. Well, I thank you for a wonderful book and a wonderful chat.
Well, I have truly enjoyed it.
And we closed out the show with a little Glenn Miller. I played that for Phyllis because I knew that Dawn Patrol was one song that she would remember. And during that interview, she had talked about how it was hard for her to listen to that old music because it reminded her of her late husband. She'd get all teary and sentimental about it. But I still had to play that Glenn Miller because it just captured that World War II era so beautifully. You've been listening to the best of the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, connecting our community through news, music, and storytelling on the air and online. I'm Vic McCunis. And if you go to our Book Nook archive at wyso.org, we have over 1,000 Book Nook programs archived as podcasts. You can listen to them at your leisure, at your convenience, anytime you want. And in fact, we're closing in on 1,100 interviews up there. That's a lot of radio. So if you enjoy the Book Nook and you'd like to revisit interviews going back, some of them 30 years, that's the place. That's your spot, wyso.org. And scroll through the archive. You'll be amazed at some of the people who have appeared on the program over the years. Many of them no longer with us, including Phyllis Green, who you just heard, who died in, looks like 2011. She was 91 years old. She was 81 when she did that interview. And some of my favorite guests on this program are in their 80s. I wish Lawrence Block would write another book. He's in his late 80s. I'd love to interview him again. And James Lee Burke is now in his late 80s, and he's been on the show more than any other guest, and he just keeps cranking out the books. He has another one coming out not too far from now. I'm waiting for it. He's going strong, almost 90 years old. For the best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening to your public radio station and for this program, which also comes your way on Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock.